This is the March 21st, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 1 hour scheduled for these three properties. The hearing before us involves petition 1493 from 2019, 826 from 2021, and 815 from 2022 for property ID 98283090. The property address is 8313 Northwest 12th Ave, and the property is owned by Sandra Burgess. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. For the assessor's office, we have Peter Van Nortwick as well as Stacy Martin. And for the appellant, we have Sandy Burgess and Lindsay Insalica. I'm going to turn it over to Chairman Daniel Weaver now.
All right, thank you. Good morning to everybody. I just want to make a few things clear. We're here only to determine the allowability of the exemption program for the 3 years involved, 2020, 2022, and 2023. And we're not at all going to be involved with the penalties, interest, and other factors related to this case. It's just the allowability of the exemption program. The other thing is I don't want to hear testimony from anybody other than the people who are testifying directly for the appellant and directly for the assessor. If we need additional information that we ask for and other people are involved that we need to get that information from, we can swear them in at that time. And since we do have a mixed group, when I swear you in, I want to swear you in and have each person say who they are and say I swear or affirm so I know exactly who I've got being sworn into this hearing. Any questions about that before I swear you in?
No.
Dan, I have one question. Isn't it 219, 221, and 222? You mentioned 220. And I have
You're right, Skyler. You're right. It's 219, 221, and 222.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Sorry. Okay. I did have the years wrong. I was looking at the taxes paid.
Yeah.
And so the years involved are the exemption program for 2019, 2021, and 2022.
Okay.
Okay. I'll start with the assessor's office, swearing you in, and Peter and Stacy, if you would answer individually. And then I'll have Mrs. Burgess and who's the other one?
Lindsay Insalaco.
Lindsay. Okay. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Wait a minute. Let me have Peter first.
Oh, Peter, sorry.
I do.
Stacy?
I do.
Thank you. Okay, Mrs. Burgess?
I do.
And Lindsay?
I do.
Thank you. Just to give you information, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the allowance of the exemption program for the years 2019, 2021, and 2022 for the property that was described in the introduction. And keep in mind that the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure at this point in time, I'm going to let the appellant go ahead and testify as to what they're looking for.
I'm sorry, I do just have one question just about the years. Are those the tax years for...
It's the years that apply, the years information that applies for taxes paid in the next year.
Okay.
Years. Okay. So it's for taxes paid in 20, 22, and 23, but the information is from 2019, 2021 and 2022.
Great. We are on the same page. Okay.
So go ahead, whoever's going to testify, Lindsay or Mrs. Burgess.
I'm going to let Lindsay, because I'm just really confused by it all, actually, a little bit.
I guess I just first want to say, like, I'm so sorry to anybody who has had to, like, deal with this scenario. We've been in the weeds ourselves just trying to understand it. Like, and I'm just sorry so much time and energy has been taken trying to figure this out. My mom is an innocent victim. Like, we are trying to just make sure she can stay in her home. And so I don't really know. I feel like we can make this easy for her because we are not really trying to challenge. I don't think after trying to just understand what the heck is going on, I don't believe that they do qualify. There is 1 year where I think it's very, very close. There's medical records for that 2021 calculations. There's a lot of medical bills that are not in account because the investigator only looked at checking accounts, and all of those medical records went through credit cards, and those were never looked at. We are just in the weeds trying to get records and make sense of things, and this is just one of many things as, like, the victim and victim's family that we've had to try to figure out. And we just, honestly, we just aren't able to even try to figure out how. I think it's close, but we're just basically not fighting even. And so I know you said we can't talk about the interest and the penalty, and that is really, but this is what we've been told to do, is come before you and then to go to the state level. And so that's why we're here. Cause we really are just, feel like the county knew my mom was a victim and decided to be as harsh as possible, and knowing she is the one who's going to suffer, and us. Like, we're just trying to keep her in her home. It's been a really, really hard couple of years. And so we're not fighting whether they qualify. We understand there should be a penalty. It is 100% on top of calculating interest back to the date due, even though interest shouldn't be calculated back to the date due. It was a period of 9 months that they had the money. And so I don't understand how interest is calculated back to the date due. And that is one thing that I would like to challenge in particular. And then we just are asking for mercy. Like, it's a really, like, my mom's working two jobs. We're just all trying to keep her in her home, to keep one thing stable in our lives. And it's the one space we can still gather as a family to try to weather the storm. Like, my dad did some things that were awful and horrible, and we acknowledge that and recognize that. I truly don't think that it was his intention. And I know this doesn't make sense to you, but without going any further, for him to try to get away with something on this. I think he is incredibly confused. He was incredibly sleep deprived, having medical issues, and, you know, it is what it is. That's just the stance and the place that we're coming from. So.
Let me ask a couple questions. One, are you still married to this gentleman?
I am still married, yes.
And, the home is still owned jointly with both of you?
It is.
Just, we've tried to figure out how to get them financially separated, and we can't figure out how to do that and still have my mom be able to stay in her home. So.
Well, I assume you have legal counsel and people working with you.
No, I have no money. I have no money to get legal counsel.
Well, those are issues that we can't deal with at this level.
I know.
So you're going to have to either deal with it yourself or get legal counsel to help you weed through that. If you choose to appeal this, I'd advise you to get some forensic accountant to look at the information. As you said, if there is additional information on medical costs that needs to be considered, then a forensic accountant can figure that out for you. Otherwise, your appeal is as it stands, as the information stands in front of us right now. Okay, you have nothing further at this point?
I would encourage you, if you qualify for the current year or maybe 1 year back, to apply for that exemption just on your own, because he has no income now. I'm assuming he's in prison.
Right, he is. So
I would definitely do that.
Yes.
And then as Dan said, there's even free legal advice available if you check around.
Yeah, we've tried. It's such a complicated whole situation that he's put us in.
Okay, that was my only comment.
But thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Peter, we have read the information in that's been presented by the assessor's office, and that's been derived from the sheriff's office, and I think we have a good understanding of that. If you want to just summarize for us and tell us what you think is relevant to this hearing today.
Sure. Of course, when they first sent in their documents, they were approved. And then one of Mr. Burgess's victims contacted us and said, "Hey, do you realize that he just pled guilty to, basically participating in a Ponzi scheme?" And so when, that happened and that information was brought to me, I reached out to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the U.S. Attorney's Office at that point said, "Hey, can you send us all the information?" And the U.S. Attorney, in conjunction with the FBI, they reviewed the information that was submitted, and they came back to us and said, "We definitely feel that there's potential here for a case for fraud, but it is too small for the U.S. Attorney's Office to pursue, and the fact that he is already in federal prison, that there's no reason to pursue this." And so they then told us that the next step would be for us to have the sheriff's office look into it, and so that then they could get the records that the FBI had gotten in the hearings, or in their investigations, not the hearings, in their investigations. And so we did reach out to the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office then did their investigation. They got the records and everything from the FBI and came back and also said that, there is reason to believe that fraudulent activity has occurred. So then it came a question as to what is Clark County going to do about it. So myself and the sheriff deputy involved in the prosecuting attorney's office, we met on it and decided that probably the best course of action, because we'd have to get Mr. Burgess out of federal prison, bring him back to Clark County, and there'd be lots of costs involved in that. Our best decision was just to remove them from the program and apply the penalties. And I do feel for Mrs. Burgess and Lindsay and the entire family. And, I've talked to them on the phone a number of times, but the challenge that we have is that the person who is not on this call, which is Mr. Burgess, is the one that filed the forms. There was significant income that was left off. So Stacy then went back when we got all the bank records from the sheriff's office and the FBI, went back through, looked all through those bank records. So that's the third time that these financial records have been looked at, and came to the conclusion that their income was too high for those 3 years to qualify for the senior exemption program. And so that was the reason that they were taken out, because their income was, and you know, you have all the numbers there, so we don't need to go over the numbers. And then, so once that happened, then they had been cut a check originally by Clark County. Mr. Burgess and Mrs. Burgess both signed that check and deposited it. And so then we said, okay, obviously we need to get the money back for Clark County, because they didn't need it. The interest and penalty, the interest decision is a treasurer decision. And then the opposing of the penalty is an assessor decision. And because there was significant income that was left off of the applications, I impose that, you know, 100% penalty, which we do for other people that get on the senior exemption program that don't qualify. So I say you have all the bank records. You can see the income. You have the sheriff's office report. You know, I don't think there's any really, doesn't sound like there's any question here at all. The fact is, the income was such that they just don't qualify to be on the program, which is the bottom line here. So if you have any questions about it, any of you would love to answer them.
Well, I think the information was pretty straightforward. I don't have any questions. John or Lisa, do you have any questions?
Not about the senior exemption part of it. I just wonder if there's any grace that they can find from somebody, at least on maybe on the penalty part of it. But that's something that we don't address.
That's beyond our purview.
Right.
John, anything from you?
No, I don't have any questions on it either. It seems to be pretty straightforward as far as what we can do as a board. So I don't have any questions.
Okay, I guess, Lindsay, the only thing I'd urge you is that if you think that there is 1 year that qualifies, you need to get some help to determine whether that qualifies because of the medical exemptions and so on. Other than that, I have nothing else to say.
Thank you for your
anything
time.
Anything else, Peter? For Peter and Macy? Stacy?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you. You'll hear from us within 30 days.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Close the hearing.
This is the March 21st, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves Petition 438 for property ID 182142010. The property is owned by Moore Space Storage, LLC. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Lonnie Dawkins here for the assessor's office, and we have Jordan Rubin here on behalf of the appellant. If you could please both raise your right hands to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. I need to give this to you for the full day here, Jordan. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to your testimony and make a decision on the value of your property or your client properties as of January 1st, 2023. Keep in mind the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so the subject property is a 360-unit self-storage building. The building finished construction in late 21, at which point the lease-up started. If you look at our pages 8 and 9, you can see the actual occupancy as of the date of value was 68 of the 360 units. So the subject was almost 81% vacant at the as of the date of value. So given that the property is in the lease-up phase, the indicated value based on the actuals would have been significantly lower than the notice value. So we feel that the value should be discounted until the property reaches full occupancy.
And is that the discounted as $1,000,007?
$3,960,000.
Okay.
Is the value we're requesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically based on the fact that it wasn't fully occupied.
So it was significantly vacant. We spoke with the owner a few weeks ago, and there's about 60% vacancy currently. He thinks it'll be about another year before they reach full occupancy. Yeah, as of the day of that, it was a little over 80% vacant.
And that's documented where?
Pages 8 and 9 of our report have the rent roll provided by the owner.
Got it.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, Lonnie, go ahead.
All right. Well, good morning. So, just in summary, I presume you guys have read my report. On page 12, on page 12 of my report is the income model that was relied on heavily for the valuation. If you want to turn there. Mm-hmm. So the income model of 360 units shows a value of $4,786,293, and that's based on estimated market rents and a 20% vacancy, 25% operating expenses, plus property taxes, which property taxes generally are about 10% of expenses. So if you were looking at it from more a market standpoint, that would be like a 35% expense rate and a cap rate of 6.5%. So since we didn't include property taxes in the operating expenses, we included them in the cap rate. So a loaded cap rate of 7.4%. That gives us a value of $4,786,000. We discounted it $321,000 and some change for lease up. And the vacancy rate that I used was a 20% rate, which a stabilized self-storage is generally between 10 and 15% vacancy for a stabilized facility. So we discounted it an additional 5% in the vacancy rate in my model. And then an additional $321,000 for lease up. So fortunately, the taxpayers in my value are not incredibly far apart. We're looking at 10%. I'll just give you a little summary of the self-storage facility. I know we met yesterday and talked about industrial. And so there's really been four property types that have been extremely strong in the market over the last 5 years. One is multifamily, mobile home parks, industrial, and self-storage. They've been the strongest markets, you could say nationally, but definitely here in Clark County. So when we look at the sales of facilities, we don't, that I'm aware of, we don't have any facilities that are in lease-up mold. So I'm in agreement that during a lease-up period, there would be a discount because, you know, it takes a couple years to get these things at full occupancy. But when we look at the sales, we're quite a ways below what these things are selling for. If you look at the sales that I've included in the report, I'll show you what page number they're on. You guys are probably going to find it before I do.
27?
Thank you, Dan. On page 27 is the summary of the six sales that I've included. Now, there's been some other self-storage facilities that have sold, but they're multi-story, and they're generally they sell for a lot more than the single story, generally speaking. They're usually newer. So the thing about this property, it's new. And it's in Richfield by the fairgrounds. So it's an area that's changing rapidly. We've got the urban growth boundary has been lifted in that area. And I think that was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So we're seeing a lot of residential moving in. So basically, like a lot of commercial properties, the commercial follows the rooftop. So what we're seeing is a huge expansion in. If you've driven around the north of Clark County Fairgrounds, you see all these subdivisions going in. So I totally understand that we're not at full occupancy, but the issue I have is the sales of the self-storage facilities that we do have are so much more than what we have it assessed for that I think it's hard to argue that the discount isn't great enough. So, but, you know, it's tough. That lease-up phase, it takes a couple years, and I don't have a firm understanding of what that discount is, because normally these facilities don't sell until they're leased up. As you can see on page 27, the dollar per square foot of sales ranges from 116 to 219. There's one in Kalama, which is more rural, and right up I-5. And that is cell number 6, and that one sold for $219 a foot, and it's right off a Todd Road exit if you're familiar with Kalama, which is very rural, and I'll just open it up for questions if you have any questions about my report.
If you look at page 34. So you're saying the sales comparison ranges from 116 to 219, and this is valued at 88. Is that right?
It's 82.
Oh, 80. Okay.
The income approach
said 88. And
yeah, so we discounted it about $6 a foot.
So that would be comparable to the 116 or 219. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. I have no further questions. Any rebuttal?
No, I have nothing further to add.
No, I don't have any questions.
Lisa?
No.
Are you muted? Can't hear you. Can't hear you.
Just a minute, Ben. No, I don't have any further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, close that hearing.
This is the March 21st, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition 168 for property ID 113-893-004. The property address is 2112 Southeast 100th Court, and the property is owned by Ron Tafoya and Siobhan Curran. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Ron and Siobhan here for the appellant. If you could both please raise your right hands to be sworn in now.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2023. Keep in mind, the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Did you want to go to your
summary? So whoever wants to talk.
Okay, great. So we did provide pretty thorough analysis of comparable homes that have sold in the time frame required, and then also additional analysis of other comparable homes as we came to the conclusion that our adjustments are wrong. And I am actually pulling up the summary here now on my end. Ron, would you like to elaborate on that further or give us instructions on kind of how to read our documentation?
I could, but I just want to make sure that would be relevant to the hearing. I'm not really sure at what level you would prefer us to speak to our hearing. Would you please clarify for us? Because we have a lot to say about it. We just want to make sure that we tell you what's relevant to you.
We have read your information, and I think if you could just point out the things that you believe are most important and would lead us to a conclusion that the proper value is something different than what the assessor has said.
Okay, so I'll start on a high level, and Siobhan can possibly drill down into some more detail. But based on our understanding and our research, we believe and also feel that we have proven that the assessor did not choose comparable properties in their grid that are really anything like our property. So we thought that the major criteria that they used to even select comps was off base. We provided three larger categories of class, neighborhood, and view, and analyzed those in particular very carefully. And if you were to compare our comparable properties with theirs, you would see that the ones that we selected were very similar to our home in most major aspects, and that the two comps that they selected in their grid were quite different from ours and in much more expensive locations, as well as had a long list of superior features, properties, etc. So we more or less looked at their methodologies and tried to duplicate them to the best of our ability, but also just kind of showed where we thought those were in error, and then reselected comparable properties and demonstrated to you why we thought ours were a lot closer and made more sense. What do you think, Siobhan?
Yes, that's exactly what I had noted down as well. The two properties they selected are, we couldn't even adjust for them, that they're so far off. The property itself, the neighborhood itself is completely different. The structure of the homes, the landscaping, I mean, it's to the point where, you know, our property, the single family home was two stories, while one of the two properties even has like a live-in area for a nanny or parents. So the properties themselves, the neighborhood, they're really quite different for many reasons, which we cited. And then we, as Ron stated, we did find some comparable sales that really truly were comparable to our property and required less adjustments than the comparable sales they selected.
Now, right. Let me ask a question. You purchased this home in October of 21. Is that correct?
Yes.
For $925,000. And did you pay, full price, or did you have to, were you in a bidding situation where you had to pay more?
How would you answer that, Siobhan? I mean, at the time, well, yes. Go ahead.
I believe the property was listed off the top of my head, maybe at 915 or 895. I mean, that's a public record I can pull. We did bid slightly more, but it was not a bidding war.
Yeah, exactly. It was 895, actually. It was 895. And then, and there was no, like, it was an unusual situation where we had to, there was no counter offers made. So we were blind to other bids at the time. And it was like, just make your highest and best offer at the time. And that's, so we didn't really know exactly the nature of it. That was just kind of how it was sold to us. It was kind of an unusual situation in that regard.
Yes, and
yeah, that's what I meant by.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to point out that the comparable sales that the appraiser selected, those sold for shortly after ours did for substantially higher dollar amounts. So at no point in time in the market has the properties truly been comparable to ours.
Those are like $1.1, $1.2 million homes. And we also provided, the comparables that we selected, actually, I think one of them sold for right around that same amount. I don't have that in front of me right now. I don't have everything pulled up right now. But anyway, if you don't mind me asking, sir, what are you... kind of getting at, or what can we answer for you? I'm not clear on.
Well, I just wanted to know if there was any bargaining involved in the property, because during that time period, that was not unusual for people to have to pay more than the asking price for a house, because there were several people would be looking at the house at the same time, and they got into a bidding situation.
That kind of happened, sir. Yes, it was kind of more like it was in that regard. So I think we paid more than it was worth? Probably, because it was just a hot market at that time. And I think if you were to look it up in like Zillow and the comps and things, we paid more than it was like worth as far as that goes. And again, we didn't get into a counter offering, counter bidding situation. Just give us, give us your highest and best bid, and that's kind of how that went. That happened.
Yep.
What was the date that you bought your home? It was the end of 22, wasn't it?
No.
21.
October 21.
Okay. October.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that would be a year and 2 months before the assessment period. So it was a substantially hotter and higher valued market at that time, and it definitely So I hope that helps.
Okay, thank you.
You did not appeal the value last year, did you? Or did you?
We didn't really have a chance to, because we just purchased the home. So it was kind of assessed for how it was, and we don't recall there even being a process at that time. If there was, we missed it. It was like nine something, like, and I don't remember what it was, because we had just bought the home. We didn't get any notice that we're aware of at the time. And then all of a sudden it kind of shot way up. It went from like, I don't know, low to mid nines to like 1,045,000 or whatever it was. So this was our first chance to appeal as we understand it. Is that correct, Siobhan?
Yes.
Okay. And you've provided us, I don't even know here what we've got, how many different sales we've got on it that you have provided. And so we've looked at those. So, okay, I don't have any other questions on this.
I don't have any other questions.
Good.
If I may, we did all the other things that we provided you was to support why we chose the three comparables that appear in the county required form. So if it was a lot, we apologize. We just tried to make it easy to understand to the best of our ability. But we just wanted you to see our methodology for arriving at the three comps that we arrived at. And so that would – go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so if you do appeal again, just know that you can make it much simpler. I mean, it looks like you put a lot of work into this, a lot of pictures, a lot of – you find good comps. You can include a couple pictures. And okay. that's really all you need to do.
Okay.
It just will save you hours. It looks like hours and hours of time you spent on this.
Speaking to that, if you don't mind, if we tried to get guidance from the assessor, and so if we ran around in circles, you know, a little bit, it's because it was stressful for us, and that stress came from the lack of clarity that we tried to get. So we end up just giving you as much analysis as we could. So thank you for that.
Make sure in your petition number, your pages, we call them the blue pages, you said we were requesting the value be revised to 813,975. Are you doing that, or are you staying with the 975 that you originally requested?
No, the lower figure for sure. Do you want to speak to that, Siobhan?
Yes. After going through literally hours and hours of tax assessors data, and you know, they actually don't follow the standard universally accepted appraisal requirements. They have their own adjustments that they do, that we were able to evaluate by going through, you know, years of their records, and we asked them for clarification. They didn't provide it. So after analyzing how they their methodology, based on that, we are requesting the lower tax value.
Yeah, and just one more comment I want to make. Make sure when you're giving this information that you don't talk about assessed values or provide us with comparable, or I should say other assessed values. We don't look at assessed values. We look at comparable sales. So when you're making your argument, you don't want to base it on other homes' assessed values. You want to base it on comparable
sales. That's why... Yeah. And yeah, I misspoke. I would say methodology, but that's why we found comparable sales that truly were comparable. Like, for example, there's one that sold for $912,000, which was very similar to ours, and then there were adjustments made based on that property.
Okay. Yeah, so we were looking at I guess those were, like, to your point, those were just kind of ancillary additional arguments. What we did is we looked at the requirements, and we did not really focus on assessed values. We just kind of mentioned it as an aside, but if that was not in our favor, we didn't mean it that way. We did look at market, and actually the very first version of it, we appealed it, and then we had a realtor submit some comps for us, and we turned those in, and that got rejected. And so that caused us to go into the deeper analysis and to revise our opinion.
By who? Rejected by the assessor's office or the Board of Equalization?
The assessor, I believe, is who rejected the first. Because the first appeal what we're trying to say is we didn't delve deeply into it because we just went through a realtor because that was our understanding that would meet the requirement. So we approached that appeal that way. And then that just got rejected wholesale, and then we started looking at the fine print and then went into the deeper analysis. So that, I hope, will explain why it's so different.
Don't even worry about giving us anything about assessed values. Just deal strictly with comps. And I don't have any other comments or questions. That's all my
– Thank you.
If you need guidance in the future, you're better off to call the Board of Equalization than the assessor's office, because the Board of Equalization deals with – the appeal process, and the assessor's office is looking for the highest and best value they can get out of the property.
Okay. That's one of those things where, like, yes, it's like it wasn't – we tried to get that clarification from the assessor early, but now that we've been through the process, your point is taken, and we understand better.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All
right.
We appreciate you. The commentary and feedback. This is our first time, you know, we've been through this. So.
All right. You'll hear from us within 30 days.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. If you need anything else from us, we'll be glad to provide it now that we know how to do this correctly. And we apologize for taking you down on unnecessary wormholes. That was not our intention.
Not a problem.
All right. You're fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Close the hearing.